When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours.
Everybody, it is 7 minutes past the hour, 12:07 on the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. Our phone number, 404-872-0750. Lines are wide open, so if you're always wondering how you're going to get through, right now is the right time. 1-800-WSB-TALK or 404-872-0750. Twitter is at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. I am almost at 13,000 followers, so if you're not following me, you are already missing part of the conversation. And, of course, there's thinkglink.com. So while I'm waiting for the phone lines to fill up, 404-872-0750, and they are starting to do that, I am going to talk to you about a really cool conference I was at the last 2 days. And the technologies, this was a technology conference focused on water and energy and food. And those three things are part of the components that we need to live. And I want to talk just specifically about two technologies that I learned about that I think are really going to be game changers. So one thing I learned about was this thing called Aqua Harvest Technology, aquaharvest-technology.com, and I will tweet that out. And what it does is there are containers, like shipping containers that are 80 feet long and 8 feet high and, I don't know, 15 feet wide. And they are growing as much food in those containers as on 19 acres of property. 19 acres of farm versus one shipping container. You know the kind you see stacked up in ports? One shipping container. 80 feet by like 15 or 20 feet wide, maybe not even that wide, by 8 feet high, and they're growing the same amount of produce as in 19 acres. And one person, one half of one person's time can farm it. So it's one-seventh as much personal labor, which makes it far less expensive. The food is way better for you. It's got no GMOs, and it would be organic, except it's hydroponic. And you eat the produce when it's hours old as opposed to days old by the time it's typically consumed. The produce has 8 times the nutrient density, and it is you can control 100% of the farming. And it is just incredibly cool. And you think to yourself, how are we going to feed all these people in the world? This is how we're going to do it, with this kind of really interesting technology that allows us to produce the same amount as in 19 acres as in one shipping container. There's another technology that I learned about, which allows for incredibly fast building techniques. And this company has created technology where you have, it basically looks like drywall, but it's a little bit thicker. When you build with it, and it just kind of goes up, and you put it on a little base, and you put it up, and in 4 days you can have a 1,000-square-foot house. And that house could cost as little as $8,000 to $10,000 for 1,000 square feet. And the R factor, which is what you measure when you're looking at energy savings, the R factor could be as high as R60. Typical construction is like R20, R19, R21. This is R60. It's incredible. And it's the kind of thing that would make it so cheap, so inexpensive to live in your house. And so these kinds of technologies that are coming out are going to literally, and they're coming out so fast, they're going to change the way that we live, think about recycling, the whole idea of recycling is changing. I also saw some technology that just, it's incredible. It makes elements out of nothing. It's like looking at Star Trek. And when you look at this and you look at the people, the science behind it, the scientists, the technologists, the people who are financing this kind of technology, and you realize that they're really smart minds who are out there solving some of our biggest problems. How are we going to feed ourselves? How are we going to live? How are we going to build the communities that we're going to be building? It's just inspiring and engaging. So I will put out some links to some of these companies that are out there so you can see some of the things that are going on and weigh in on it. Because I think that when we look at this technology and the word gets disseminated, we can just take it in and it helps generate new ideas and it gives us all hope. And that it's just so powerful. Hope is the most powerful thing we have as human beings. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Ben joins me on the line from Lawrenceville. Hi, Ben.
Hey, how are you, Elise?
I'm great. What's going on with you?
Hey, I got a question as to whether it would be more beneficial for me to pay off my mortgage faster or if I should use the extra income to start a Roth IRA.
Well, you can put, how old are you, by the way?
I'm 26.
Okay. Well, I love the idea that you want to start a Roth IRA. Do you also have a 401k at work?
Yes, I do. I've been contributing 10% to that since the day I was eligible, which was when I turned 21.
Awesome. That is great. It's amazing, isn't it, how fast it kind of accumulates just when month in, month out, you're just investing?
Now the interest is actually working in my favor, so yeah, I like that.
Good. Well, at 26, you got a long way to go, and I'm thrilled that you're starting so young. Tell me a little bit about your mortgage. What have you got?
I have a house that this December will be my third year in. The mortgage amount on it was $167,000, and it's right around about $1,200 a month, and it's at a 4% interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I find myself wanting to throw more money at the principal, but I think it's more of like a psychological thing of having the mortgage paid off where I could use that money more wisely in an IRA to have it actually earn money, but I'm really not sure which way to go.
So I would say to you that you've hit the nail on the head in terms of the thing that you're responding to is an emotional, psychological need to not have debt. I'm assuming you don't have any other debt. You graduated from college, grad school, no debt, right?
Yeah, I have zero debt outstanding besides the mortgage.
And tell me a little bit about, do you have a rainy day fund, emergency fund, money that's just sitting there waiting just in case something happens?
I do, but I wouldn't say it's, some people say 6 months. I don't have a full 6 months, I mean, but I do have enough to where it could tide me over to where I could, if something were to happen, I could either find more employment or something of that nature, but I mean, I have enough that I'm comfortable, but yeah, there's always room for more.
Okay. So what I would say to you is there are a lot of better places to put your money than in a mortgage that's only costing you 4%. And
okay.
The reason I say that is unless you're telling me did you put down 20% when you bought this house?
No, I did not.
So the reason that you would go forward and put money into the mortgage is so that before interest rates go up, you could refinance that loan and have a 20% equity and not have private mortgage insurance. So
okay.
Private mortgage insurance is super expensive these days. So
yeah,
you're
it
12...
hurts me a little bit. It's about $150 a month it's wasted on my loan.
It is. And yeah. Imagine if you had 20% equity. What did you put down anything when you bought this house?
Yeah, it was a standard FHA loan.
Okay, so 3%?
Right.
3.5%?
Yes.
So what I would rather see you do is figure out how you're going to get $30,000. I assume, what was the purchase price of the house?
$171,900.
Okay. So you need about $35,000 in cash to be able to refinance. If you
right.
could find $35,000 in cash and you think your job is reasonably secure, what I would try to do is refinance that mortgage to a 15-year at 3.5%.
Okay.
This way, you're going to get the best of both worlds. You're going to pay a little bit more each month, but you're going to have the mortgage, basically, and pay virtually nothing in interest for it. And
right.
then every other dollar you have is going to go to rebuilding your emergency fund and then your Roth IRA.
Okay.
And that's a really good way to balance this, because at 3.5%, maybe you'll still end up paying $1,200 a month. Maybe you'll pay $1,300 a month, but you're now going to have 15 years that you're not going to pay for. And
right.
the overall interest rate is going to be lower. And so that's going to be a big win on both sides.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Good luck. It's so nice to hear about somebody who is young and doing things in the right way. It's just thrilling. So congratulations, Ben. Lisa joins me on the line from Decatur. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, we are under contract due diligence for buying a new home, and we did a radon test, and the levels were 26, and the normal acceptable levels are 4.
Right.
So we don't know what to do. We love the house, and it's, you know, we can do the mitigation for the home. So our question is whether we think, is it safe once they get rid of, if we put a mitigation system in, will it be safe for us to live in there?
So why would you want to take the risk?
Well, because
do you know what radon does? I mean, it's horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you have kids, it's terrible for the kids. It damages their brains. It can give you all kinds of other issues. So yes, you can mitigate it by opening up the basement window, but when you have to, you can put other things in as well, right?
Right, right.
You just have to know what the risk is. So you have to decide how that all stacks up, and is it worth taking that chance? Now, if the entire area has radon issues, and there are, places that have radon issues, then what you have to do is take a look at a house that you know had radon issues or has radon issues and how they've mitigated. You can test there. You have to find a way to make yourself comfortable, or you're never going to sleep at night.
Right.
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 So if you're asking me if it's safe for you to live there, I'm reasonably certain that some expert could figure out a way to make it reasonably safe or even perfectly safe for you to live there. Are you going to feel safe? Are you going to want to go to sleep at night? Are you going to worry when you have kids? If so, then you shouldn't live there. You should let this house go, because you will always fall in love with another house. There will be another house for you, but a house that doesn't have these kinds of issues. But if you can, and if you can't figure out a way to emotionally get over it, then you shouldn't buy this house. But if you can and you're going to feel comfortable and you're going to sleep fine at night because they're going to tell you the radon level is 1, then go ahead and buy it. But make sure you get enough of a discount to cover the cost and then some of the retrofit. 19 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glenk Show. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Stay tuned. I'll be back in a moment with more on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elyse Glenk is live, answering your money and real estate questions. Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Starting with yours, News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
It's 25 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glenk Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. Lines are open, 404-872-0750. I just tweeted out one of the companies that I saw over the last couple of days. Really cool. Aqua Harvest Technology. Stephanie joins me on the line from Duluth. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great as well. Thank you.
What can I help you with?
I am trying to get your position on estate sales, but not the traditional estate sale. This is when you open your home and you sell items that you don't want to move to, I guess, generate revenue that can kind of offset the actual move.
Uh-huh.
What's your take on that?
I think it could be a great idea if you don't mind doing that and you've got all the other stuff all packed away.
Well, yeah, well, I consulted a company that does this. This is their mission, and they take 35% of the proceeds.
That's pretty common for estate sale stuff. How much do you have to sell?
I had the person come out and take a look. She says, you have quite a bit of stuff, 3-level home. I donated a lot of stuff. She says, don't donate anything else. So she has a pretty good method on, whatever you have in the pantry, things that are used, she sells everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it could work out. I just want to get your position on it.
I think it's fine, but you can't hire companies like this without thoroughly checking them out, talking to some of their past clients, because I will guarantee you, and I've seen estate sale companies, it just never unrolls the way you think it's going to. Things may get sold that you don't want them to get sold. you know, maybe there's a delay in getting the money. There's whatever there is. There's, you just want to really understand how it has worked for, say, the last five people that she's worked with. So you should get the names and numbers of her past clients, go talk to them, see where they are, if they have photos of the before and the after, and how it all worked together. Because when you do that, then you're doing your due diligence, and you know that people are happy with them. The other thing you can do, and I would recommend this for anybody you want to hire in the real estate life cycle, what, you know, this is a company, but it could be a staging company or a realtor, whoever it is, put the name of the person and the name of the company into a Google search engine, right? And then the word complaint and see what pops up. Because, it just is amazing. People are so vocal when something goes right or wrong these days. There's so many places that you can give your opinion. You can be out there, citizen journalism, we like to call it in the journalism world. You know, people giving their opinions and sharing information. And when you go on Google, you are basically organizing the search in a way that's going to make sense. And so I would do that and figure out exactly what people think of this person, and then go do the personal phone calls and talk to those people about what they did. And then you can take a look at the contract and what it says and negotiate the contract, and then you sign it, and then you're off to the races. Just don't try to skip over steps. When you skip over steps, when anybody skips over steps, invariably something will go wrong. But good luck, Stephanie. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live, here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on News 95.5 and AM 750. WSB.
It's 12:37 on the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. We've got a few more lines open before we take Bill's call. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. You can also tweet me at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. And I did mean to send out the next link to the next company, but I'll just keep doing that either through the show, or I'll do it when we're at the next break. But follow me at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, and sign up for the free weekly newsletter at thinkglink.com. You can also follow me on the YouTube channel. We are social media cool at ThinkGlink, for sure. All right, 404-872-0750. Bill joins me on the line. Hi, Bill.
Hey, good morning, Elise.
What's going on?
Well, my situation is similar to the gentleman that called in a little earlier, with the exception I'm a little bit older. I'm 50. I have roughly a year and a half of salary stockpiled in savings, which is drawing basically nothing in interest.
Right.
I've been funding a Roth IRA for 4 or 5 years now, completely funded each year, plus I have a 401k at work.
Uh-huh.
And my house, I probably have 12 years left on that 15-year mortgage at 4%. And I'm just wondering, this money's just sitting there in savings, and if I need to maybe apply it to my mortgage, I could gain at least probably 3.5% more interest just cutting off my mortgage.
Well, you've got, what, 12 years left?
Right.
You might want to look into a, a 10-year loan and refinancing into that if you can get down to 3% and
okay.
Do 12 years.
Right.
10 years. So you'd shave off 2 years of house payments and you'd lower the interest rate by a full percentage point. And that's about as low as you would want to go. I mean, I know there's this temptation to just pay off the house, but seriously, and I know your money's not really earning anything. Do you have it? Do you have the money that you have in savings? Do you have it in an online account? So at least like at Discover Bank, you're earning 1% on it or close to that?
No, it's just basically stuff in a credit union savings account.
Okay, so you at least could optimize that, you know, and move it to, say, Discover Bank or one of the other really big banks. I think Discover Bank is paying close to 1%. I know it's a 0.5% difference, but you know what? It's still a 0.5%, and it really irritates me to just leave money on the table. So you should do that. And then your money is electronic anyway.
Right.
The other thing that you can do is put some of your money into Discover Bank or, you know, one of these other online banks, or you can open up a an account at Fidelity or one of the other places, or you can take some of that cash and you can actually go buy another house for rental. So have you thought about being a landlord?
Well, I think that's exactly the path I was looking at. If I pay this particular house off and get it closer, then I was looking to turn it into a rental and then purchasing a new residence for me. I've been in this house roughly 8 years, and so that was my strategy.
Ah.
So I've got that money sitting there, and I'm like, okay, worst case scenario, I could go get a home equity line credit if I needed that money to pull it back out. And like I said, at 4% versus the one that you're speaking, that's 3% gain in the money there.
So it's easier to get a home equity line on a house you're living in. So I would go get a 10-year home equity line of credit and just not borrow on it, but open it up before you leave your house.
Okay.
If you're going to leave it, I wouldn't actually change what you have at all. You're at 4%. You've got 12 years left, and you know, you can write off the interest. So I'm not sure I would change that structure for now, other than if getting locking in a 30 years at 4%. But leave it at, so I would leave it, and then I would just go figure out if you can rent it for more than it's costing you for your taxes and insurance and the mortgage, and then I would go rent it, and I would go buy yourself a new place.
Okay.
So I would do that. And the reason I say this is not everybody's cut out to be a landlord, but you've got a property that you know exactly what's right with it and what's wrong with it. I mean, this is the best possible scenario, and if you buy something in a similar neighborhood not too far away, it becomes easy to take care of. So as long as it's easy and you can be in this house and you're buying the new house with, a 15-year loan at 3.5%, man, you've locked in your future costs at a place that is just like about free. And free is really good when it comes to leverage. I mean, you're just going to leverage it up big time. Just make sure you have like 20% down so you don't overpay for like private mortgage insurance.
Right, and that's what I was looking at. Like I said, that money was just sitting there, and I'm like, I've got to put this to work somehow, and, you know, what's the best method? So
yeah, well, I think you're going to do better on that than you will in the stock market, because at this energy water conference that I was at over the last couple of days, there were some really, really smart money people, and every single one of them thinks we are facing a huge break in the market. They just think there's going to be one more really big kick in the teeth before one of them thinks we're going to have 17 years of prosperity, and one of them thinks, you know, they're a little fuzzy on what happens after 2016, but all of them, to a person, think that we're facing some sort of, we're overdue for a real major correction in the market. They think we're going to get it, and then we're going to move on. So, you know, it seems to me that if you can buy a house, that's the biggest leverage you're going to get for your money, way above even the stock market.
Right. Okay. Well, great.
So, yeah, go for it.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, and enjoy the show.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for calling, Bill. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Lucy joins me on the line. Hi, Lucy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. What's going on this weekend for you?
Well, I have to listen to you every weekend. So
well,
after that,
you.
I'm going to church.
Well, very nice. We often say on this show that we're drive time to church, so now you've just proven that out.
Yeah. Well, my question is, I have about $50,000 that I would like to do something better than have it at the bank. And my mortgage where I in my house where I live is 3.75%
Okay.
Interest.
That's great.
But what I don't understand is if when they send me the bill, I see the I pay insurance. It says insurance or PMI.
So, okay, so
and I would like to get rid of that and use the $50,000 if I can get rid of it. But how I will know that this PMI, I'm paying PMI or not?
Okay, well, private mortgage insurance is different from a homeowner's insurance premium. And the bank is entitled, when you sign up, to withhold money to pay a homeowner's insurance premium and your real estate taxes. In fact, they're allowed to set aside not just enough money to pay it every year, but enough money for 2 months overage, just in case. So it should tell you in your original loan docs what the pieces that go into making up your mortgage payment are and how much they're going to be. And you can, if you have private mortgage insurance, that's different, and it's typically like a flat fee. You know, it just depends how big your mortgage is and what it is. And you can actually call the loan and call the lender on the loan and say, can you walk me through what this is, what my payment is? So when did you get this loan?
Oh, I got this more than a year ago.
A year ago? So do you still have the loan documents?
Yes, I do have the loan. But, you know, the insurance, I was paying insurance and with my private insurance agency, and they told me they want to pay that. So now they are paying it instead of me.
Who's paying it?
I'm sorry?
Who is paying your insurance premium?
The insurance. The mortgage loan.
Okay. So then that's, if you see an insurance premium listed as part of a, you know, they hold it in an escrow account, and if you're seeing it, that's probably what it is. But you can always call the toll-free number that's provided on your statement and just say, can you walk me through what the payment is? You can also go back and look at your loan documents, because it should have been documented what each piece of the payment is, including the taxes, the insurance, and if there was private mortgage insurance. So let me just ask you the most obvious question is, how much did the house cost, and what did you put down on it?
Well, the house cost $371,000, and it was just crazy. And then I had been refinanced until now that I owe $240,000.
Okay. So if you owe if your loan is for $240,000 on the house that was originally $371,000, that you are not paying private mortgage insurance unless you totally got taken. If you're paying private mortgage insurance in your loan documents, which is where you should go, you would see a disclosure form that you had to sign that talked about private mortgage insurance and the fact that this loan carried private mortgage insurance and what the rules are for private mortgage insurance. So if you go to your loan documents and you do not see anything that says private mortgage insurance, then you're not paying it and you're paying the insurance premium. But you only have, I mean, you have like 33%+ in equity in this property. So I highly doubt, unless you went with, you know, a real slime ball lender, that you have private mortgage insurance. But you should check. And if you're still not sure, you should call the 800 number and talk to them about it. Now, as for your $50,000, I think there are plenty of better places that you could put that $50,000 than sitting in a bank account. And just like I said to Bill, you know, for you, I think that if you want to rent out your home and you've got those costs under control and you know what they are and you want to take the $50,000 and buy yourself another home, or you want to buy a house to rent out with the $50,000, which will need to be about $150,000 total because you need 30%, 35% down typically when you're buying a rental property, all good with that. That might be exactly the right thing to do, but you got to put a whole lot of effort into thinking about it. And you and Bill and even Ben, if he's still listening, should probably take advantage of my Intentional Investor How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate program, where you can actually learn about being a first-time real estate investor. If you go to thinkglinkstore.com, use the code BUYNOW, BUYNOW, one word, it'll give you 75% off, and you'll buy the whole thing, 9 videos, 9 ebooks, for about $75, and that's the best deal going. 48 minutes past the hour, I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Elise Glink, Sundays on News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours.
It's 12:56 on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. We've got lines open, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Billy joins me on the line. Hey, Billy, so you've got a whole bunch of money in your 401k?
Yeah, I do. I heard you mention earlier that, you know, that you talked to some folks at a conference that don't see the market doing too well going forward. There could be some rough waters ahead. I've anticipated that for quite a while. And I've got about, I don't know, probably $550,000 in a 401k, about $350,000 in cash. I mean, basically in a money market fund.
Yep.
probably earning, I don't know, 2%.
That's lucky. If you're earning 2%, that's pretty good today for cash.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good. But is there a better place for that kind of money? I mean, if you're worried about the market trading at such ridiculous levels based on the fundamentals of our economy, what do you do with your money?
It's really, I don't have any magic bullets and answers for that. People ask me that all the time, and I have to tell you that, especially in a 401k where you're limited to, if you work for a, do you work for yourself or a company?
I work for a company.
Okay, so you're limited to the 10, 15, 20, maybe it's even 30 mutual funds that they offer in that 401k.
Right.
So you could put some of it into, I'm sure they don't have anything that's not, you know, like, forward-leaning in some ways, but if they had something that was a little contrary, you could put some money in there. But, you know, like you, I've had a lot of money in cash, and some of my money has seen a great run-up, and some of it's just sat there, and it's depressing to watch it just sit there. But, you know, I believe in my heart that there is a lot about this marketplace that just does not make sense. In fact, some of the conversation, I was going to talk about this next hour, but I'll start this conversation now, which is so interesting, is the trading that is going on, the option trading right now, is kind of insane. And so you'll see the dollar value of electricity trading, right, option trading, four times the amount of actual usage. You'll see,
wow.
If you look at Netflix, for example, a friend of mine who's at this conference is a big Netflix, he watches Netflix, and he's just like, it's ridiculous. Netflix option trading is in the billions of dollars, and the amount of revenue they're bringing in is, let's say, $10 million. And
right.
You're seeing 100 or 1,000 times that in the option trading. And where is true value? Where does real value come in? And so his belief is that we're going to see some sort of really big, crazy blow up over the next, he thinks it's going to start over the next 3 to 4 months, because he thinks the tension that's being caused in the financial markets with all of that option trading isn't going to last. I don't know if that's right or not, but that's what he believes. And so, you know, he also believes that we should go back to gold. Not that I want to ignite all the gold people out there.
Right.
But so I don't really have a good answer for you. I wish I did, Billy. I don't. I think the answer is that you have to plan for the next 20 to 30 to 40 years. And maybe that's a place to start when we come back, and just sort of know that it's going to be rough waters going forward, but over a long period of time, you're going to be okay. I'll talk about this more in a little bit. 404-872-0750. Feel free to weigh in. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. I am delighted to take your call, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. So my new video show that I'm going to do on WitNation.com is called Big Money Real Estate, and it's going to include interviews with all kinds of really helpful people, success stories, other people who are investing and doing well. And we're going to do a what can you buy for a certain amount of money every week. So really cool pictures and images of homes for sale all over the country, what kind of big deals you can get, all of that on this show. And so I did a little promo for it, and I just put the link out on Twitter. So if you follow me on @Glink, @GLINK, you'll see Big Money Real Estate. Or just do the hashtag Big Money Real Estate, and it should pop up. Take a look. See what you think about it. It's that we're about to, well, we will be releasing it wide. At the moment, we haven't, but I'm pretty excited about it. We're going to tape our first show coming up, and if you want to ask a question or be a guest on the show, you should email me at questions@thinklink.com, questions@thinklink.com. And if you're interested in learning a little bit more about my intentional investor series, I had a couple of tweets about that. I mentioned at the end of last hour, the intentional investor is a 9 ebook, 9-video series. It's 18 chunks of amazing content, all of which are designed to help you get introduced to properly investing in real estate, which is, again, what this Big Money Real Estate Show is going to be about. And if you're interested in The Intentional Investor and buying it, it's for sale right now, you can go to thinklinkstore.com, thinklinkstore.com, and use the code buy now and get 75% off. That seems to be the price that everybody wants to pay for this. Happy to give you this information as cheaply as I possibly can. Thinklinkstore.com, and it'll be for sale as well on WitNation, but I don't think you're going to get that same discount. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I want to go to the phones and do this call. Mark's been hanging on, but I do also want to tell you there was a very, very good report from CoreLogic this week on negative equity. Negative equity is, you know, the people who are underwater with their loans. They owe more than the houses are worth. We had a very good report this week, and I will discuss that coming up in just a moment. 404-872-0750 is our number. Hello, Mark. Welcome to the Elise Klink Show.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. I'm having a very good Sunday. What about you?
I'm having an excellent Sunday. Just got a little bit of a dilemma on trying to figure out what would be the best way to handle this, if at all. I'm afraid I might be calling you and might be calling the wrong show. I might be needing to call handle on the law in here that I absolutely positively have no case.
Well, what is... You know, all I can do, I don't even like to play an attorney on the radio, but I can certainly help you deconstruct a real estate issue. So why don't we start there? What is going on?
Okay. Well, I got last year, the fair value according to my county, it was for my home was $99,000. This year I received a 2014 state county ad valorem tax notice saying that this year my home is now, according to the county, very same place, is now worth $63,800 more for a total of $159,000. They shot it up that much.
Okay, so you had a 50% increase roughly, maybe a little bit more, 60%.
Yeah, and so my escrow was not set up to cover that. So now I've just this last week received from my mortgage company saying, whoops, you are now $731 short.
Mm-hmm.
And we need that money in a couple of months.
$731?
So, yes.
Okay. So
and
are you...
So how do I go to the county and say, look, I understand that there's a change in value and stuff, but I've asked for other people and theirs did not go up this much.
Okay. Mark, you have to fight your property taxes. Have you ever done that before?
No, ma'am.
Okay. So there's a process.
This is going to be all new for me, so getting you is hopefully going to be the best answer going forward.
Well, you don't need handle on the law for this. Every county has a process by which you can contest your property taxes and the valuation that they have given the house. So what you do is you go to the tax recorder's office and you ask them, when can I contest this? And usually when you get your tax notification, you have a certain period of time in which to do it. You can do it once a year. It's usually 6 weeks or so. Sometimes it's 2 months. Sometimes it's 4 weeks after you get the tax notification.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can contest it. And to contest it, you have to prove that other homes in the same tax classification that you're in are getting taxed at a lower rate or have a lower property value or you went up astronomically for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to prove to them that your house is not worth an extra $63,000 over last year. And so they have a process that you can go through where you can show them and file a formal appeal. And then they can tell you yes or no. And if you like it, fine. And if you don't like what they've come back at, you can contest it again. Usually you can contest a total of 3 times. It goes up to each level. And then there's like kind of a tax court that's the final level for you. And this is where it ends up. But you should certainly contest the taxes and your tax, the office that is the, like the tax assessor's office is the place to go to get that information.
Okay. And since they've already more or less paid that out of escrow, I mean, there's no way to change that anyway for this year, is there?
No, you can go backwards and file an appeal. But you can't do it if you're outside the appeal timeline.
Okay.
So usually you have to do it within a month. And it's unclear to me whether you've actually, you said you've already paid this, so it's unclear to me when your actual...
Actually, I'm looking at the statement, and it says the date due to the county is on November the 15th.
For the taxes?
Yes.
So your tax note, this is not a tax notification, this is a tax bill.
Yes.
Okay, when did you get the tax?
Form tax.
But when did you get the tax notification, at the beginning of the year?
No, just within the last month or so.
No, there's something else that you should have gotten that tells you how your house has been assessed before you actually get a tax bill. This is how it works in most counties, maybe not in yours. But when you get the tax notice, in Cook County, it comes at the beginning of the year in Illinois, where I get my tax notifications. So then you have a certain period of time. So let's just say you blew that for this year. You're going to get it for next year. So you're going to call the assessor's office tomorrow morning no matter what.
Okay.
You now have this tax bill that's due. You have to pay it. But when you go and contest your taxes, you usually can go backwards in time 1, 2, or 3 years.
Okay.
And then you get money back. Right? So, or it gets applied to the future, whatever. So you're going to have to talk to the county about both of those options, both things. When can you actually contest your property assessment, and how do you go backwards in time because you were over-assessed the prior year? And you're going to have to fight that. But you don't need handle on the law to tell you that. There's a process in place, and you can go and you can fight it. And it's designed to have you fight it on your own so that you don't have to, you know, it's not quite as big deal as you think it is. You're just going to, it's going to be annoying, and it's going to take some time. Now, because you're paying an actual bill and you're short, the mortgage company is legally entitled to collect that money from you, and you will have to pay them. You're going to have to front this because you've missed whatever window was earlier in the year.
Okay.
So you're going to have to front this. They are legally entitled to keep not just 12 months' worth of property taxes and insurance in the escrow. They're entitled to keep an extra 2 months' worth to cover you for just things like this. So you're going to have to figure out a way to make those payments to them. Usually you can pay it in chunks over time. They tell you when it's due, and you'll just have to pay that. And then you'll be able to go backwards and then go to the mortgage company and say, now you have too much. Or they'll know they have too much because you're going to get the taxes lowered, and then the tax bill is going to be less, and then blah, blah, blah. You can fight with them to get more of the excess returned back to you, which is really a thankless and exhausting task, but if you want to do it, you can. And then in the end, when you sell your house, they just send it to you in a check anyway.
Okay, sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be so much fun. You have no idea. This is like the thing that homeowners live and die for.
Thank you. You give the gift that keeps on giving.
You know, if you want some more information about contesting your property taxes, on my main website, thinkglink.com, I have a whole section about fighting your property taxes and what goes into it and what you have to do. And there's a couple of different ways that you can prove what your house is actually worth. One is by looking at comparable sales of houses that are in your tax class. And then you take your cell phone and you go around all the houses and you take pictures of them. You're going to have to print up those pictures and create a like a report for the tax assessor's office that shows you that houses, you know, 1 to 10 are all in your tax classification. They're all in your neighborhood. Your house is in worse shape. That's one way to do it. Or your houses are all in the same shape. They're the same size and the same everything, and you're being taxed 60% more than everybody else. So there'll be a whole bunch of ways for you to prove that. If you had just bought the house, you would have been able to, you could go in with your sales documents and say, hey, it's not worth $159,000. It's still only worth $100,000. And I know because 6 months ago, that's what I paid for the house. So there's all those different ways that you'll be able to prove it. But I have more information at thinkglink.com. Let me know how it goes. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I think we might have a prize pack. I will check that during the commercial break. I'm going to put up a couple of more pieces of information on Twitter So follow me at Glink, and I'll be back in a moment with more of the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live, answering your money and real estate questions, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours, News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
It's 25 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours. The number 404-872-0750. We've got our prize pack to give away. It includes a four-pack of VIP tickets to the first annual Fall North Atlanta Home Show, October 10th through the 12th at the Gwinnett Center, and a four-pack of tickets to the Georgia RV and Camper Show, October 10th through the 12th at the North Atlantic Trade Center, and a four-pack of tickets to the 29th annual A Tour of Southern Ghosts, October 10th through the 26th at Stone Mountain Park, presented by Art Station. So the value of all that, $128, we're going to give it away to the fifth caller, 404-741-0750. That's our prize pack line, 404-741-0750. Good luck. All right, 26 minutes past the hour. Let's see if we can fit Lisa in before we go to break. Hey, Lisa, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hi, what's going on?
Well, I was just wondering if when an individual sells a house, if the $250,000 capital gains tax exclusion is still part of our code.
Yes. Why do you ask?
I don't know. I read somewhere that now we're no longer allowed to do that.
No. So. Mm-mm. The 200, to the best of my knowledge, nothing has slipped through. It's $250,000 per individual. If you're married, it would be $500,000. That you could take, and to figure that out, of course, you're looking at the cost basis. So it's the cost of the purchase plus the cost of any capital improvements that materially affect things. So an addition or a new plumbing system, new roof, all of those would count, plus whatever costs of sale, and then you subtract, add that all together, that's your cost basis, you subtract that from the sales price, and you wind up with the actual profit on the property.
Okay. Well, good. Well, that's good to hear that's still going along. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Enjoy your Sunday. I know there have been a bunch of questions lately about exclusions and how they still work. And I think, I don't know, that rollover replacement rule language, which literally that's like now 10, 12 years ago that went out. It keeps coming back. That was so ingrained, that rollover replacement rule. But it really only exists now when you're buying investment property and there's a 1031 exchange, and then you have to buy a property for at least as what your old property costs in order to defer taxes. But that is within the 1031 structure. It has absolutely nothing to do with personal residences. All right, lines are open again, 404-872-0750. When we come back, I want to give you the details on the negative equity report that was released this week. It was awfully good news. And then we're going to talk a little bit more about the economy, give you my dose of Glinkonomics. I want to make sure you understand exactly where we are. 404-872-0750. This is the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live, here to guide you through your money and real estate questions, only on News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
It's 1:36 on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750 is how you reach me. Pick up the phone and call 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. So this week, CoreLogic reported that nearly 1 million residential properties went into positive value. They went into the black. So we have had, at the height of the housing crisis, something like 10 million homes underwater or upside down, meaning that the borrowers owed more on the mortgages than the homes are worth. And you can get negative equity because values decline or an increase in mortgage debt or a combination of both, but typically a decline in value. So what was the housing crisis? It was massive decline in value. So CoreLogic, which is a global property information analytics and data-enabled services provider, released a new analysis this week showing that 950,000 properties returned to positive equity in the second quarter of 2014. And that means that we've got now 44 million mortgaged residential properties. So a property doesn't even have this issue if it doesn't have a mortgage, right? Because it can never be worth less than the mortgage amount. But 44 million homes are now back in positive equity, which is probably really good for their owners. Net borrower equity increased year over year by about $1 trillion in the second quarter. About 5.3 million homes, or 10.7% of all residential properties with a mortgage, were still in negative equity, compared with 6.3 million in the first quarter of 2014. So all of this is really good. And a year ago, we had almost 15% of homes versus 10% of homes, 7.2 million versus 5.3 million, representing a year-over-year decrease of the number of homes that were underwater by 2 million. This is a huge thing. Huge. When you have positive equity, it allows you to just have so many more options, right? You can sell. You can, you know, whenever you want, you can move on with your life. There are so many people who couldn't take jobs because they couldn't get rid of their properties because they were so far underwater. All of that is coming back. And, you know, at the end of the second quarter of 2015, the national aggregate value of negative equity, so if you added up all the homes that were in negative equity, it was $345 billion. And that was down $38 billion from the first quarter of 2014. So we are seeing a huge amount of value go back into houses. And it's not saying that people aren't functionally underwater, meaning that if they actually sold the house and they had to take out the cost of sale, that they wouldn't have to come to the table with, you know, with some cash. There are more who that would. But basically everywhere around the country we're seeing equity grow, even here in Atlanta. And it's lifting the economy as a whole. And this is just a really, you can refinance, you can purchase a different house. It's all good. Nevada still had the highest number of properties in negative equity, 26%. Florida is 24%. Arizona, 19%. Illinois, 15%. And Rhode Island, 14%. This accounts for 32.8% of all the negative equity. So Georgia, did you notice? It doesn't even get into the top five. This is remarkable. Now, Springs-Roswell, Georgia, still has 15%. Atlanta-Sandy Springs-Roswell, still has 15% negative equity. So that's still pretty high for around the greater Atlanta area. But as a whole, the state is just doing so much better. So all good news on that set, that front. And you're always going to have some people who are underwater, but at least this time, you know, it's a lot less than it was. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Richard joins us on the line from Decatur. Hi, Richard.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. You have a question for me about reverse mortgages?
That's correct.
What do you need to know?
Okay, I bought my home back in 87, and it was at $120,000.
Uh-huh.
Now I got my tax statement indicating that now it's $114,000, and I have a $45,000 balance on the mortgage plus a equity balance of $29,000, and I'm trying to see if it would be a good feasible idea to do the reverse mortgage.
You must have refinanced a couple of times, and you've got the home equity line of credit, right? Because 87 to now in 2017 would be 30 years you would have paid off that loan. Did you refinance?
I did it once.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The builder had the mortgage, and we had to go to a bank after 5 years.
Okay, and when is the mortgage supposed to be paid off?
2023.
Okay. And then you've got this equity line of $29,000. When's that supposed to be paid off?
That I can get rid of. There's no set date on it. It's flexible. I can get rid of that in the way I'm trying to do it now within 5 years.
Okay. So here's the thing about reverse mortgages. Do you need the cash?
Not really. At 75 years old, I'm just trying to get out from under the burdens of that debt, which between the two is like $1,400 a month.
Okay. And do you have any income coming in?
No, no income, just Social Security and standard.
What do you get for Social Security?
That combined with Social Security retirement is about $25,000.
A year?
A year. And the wife is about $27,000.
Oh, so together you're at $51,000?
Right.
So $51,000 should be enough for you to refinance the mortgage and the home equity into one low cost. Because you're paying $1,400 a month. That's an awful lot for about $70,000 in loans.
Right.
And that's just really high. So if you truly have that much, you know, at least 20%, you ought to be able to go to a lender like Bank of America even and say to them, I want to combine these loans. I have Social Security. That should be enough income for you. Plenty of Social Security for this. As long as you don't have other debt, you ought to be able to lower that cost significantly. Like, you ought to be able to lower that to $600 or $700 a month or less.
Won't that run you into another extended contract or maybe 15 or 20 years beyond where I am right now? I'm less than 10 years to pay out.
Yeah, I understand. But if you got a, let's just say you got a 10-year loan, and you got a 10-year loan at 3%. I mean, I can do the math for you, but I can't do it while I'm talking to you, but
right.
I'll do it during the commercial break. I mean, you're $70,000 at 3%. You know, is not very much money. And when you divide that by 12, it should be enough for you, you know, to, you know, you should not have to worry about it. You should be able to cut your loan payment way down in the same 10 years, pay it all off. That's really what I want you to do, is to try and figure that out, because it's just too much. I mean, if you, let's say you just get a new loan now, right, in January, and it's for $71,000. And I'm doing this math online as we speak, right, on my own calculator. And let's say you get a 3% rate, 10-year loan. You know, your monthly payments should be something like under $700,000. I mean, sorry, $700 a month. $700 a month. So you're paying twice that.
Right.
So at $700 a month, you should be able to pay off your loan in the same 10 years, but now paying $700 instead of $1,400 a month.
That's logical.
So that's just, you know, what it is. So I think what I would do if I were you is I would go shop it around and see. Now, you still have to pay your real estate taxes and your insurance.
Right.
I don't know what those are. But the actual cost of the mortgage should be under $700 a month. And then you ought to be able to free that up without going into a reverse mortgage. Now, you could do a reverse mortgage and probably pay off all that debt with it. You won't get any cash out.
Right.
And, you know, you won't have to pay anything more except your property taxes and insurance until you sell the home. And so if you're okay with that, that's fine, too. But those reverse mortgages are very, very expensive. And if something happens and you need to sell the house, that could be a problem for the person who's left, who then won't get any equity out of the property and may have to leave the house, and that could be a problem. So if you're going to do a reverse mortgage, I'd be very, very careful. There are not that many reverse mortgages being done right now in the country, and you just want to be – but I would check this out first. It seems to me that you ought to be able to pay less than what you are, and you ought to be able to pay it all off in 10 years or less.
Sounds great.
And with $50,000, I mean, that you ought to be able to do that, no problem. But you got to search around and find the right lender to help you out.
Sounds great.
All right. Let me know what happens, Richard. You promise?
I promise. Thank you so very much.
All right. Have you have a good day, good Sunday. It's 47 minutes past the hour. It's funny. I just use the amortization schedule calculator on thinklink.com, and it pulled up, you know, everything going forward, which is great, and it shows how it all kind of comes out, which is great. You should use, there are all kinds of calculators online. You can use them at bankrate.com. You can go to eloan.com. Bank of America has them. All of the lenders have calculators and tools. And you can go there and just kind of play around with it and see how long it's going to take you to pay it off. But a reverse mortgage is super, super expensive. And if you can avoid doing that, and there are other cheaper, better ways to go, where in 10 years you've got the full $100,000 that you might need for something else, well, I'd really think you ought to do that. No question about it. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. When we come back, a few more minutes to chat a little bit about Glinkonomics and what else is going on in the big, wide world. And we'll see if I can answer one more question from you on the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Elise Glink, Sundays on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours.
It's 54 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours on WSB. So Freddie Mac released its multi-indicator market index. Wow, people are really struggling to find interesting things. They call it the MIMI, which is whatever. But basically what it does is it looks at the stability of housing markets across the country. And they started it, I don't know, last year, maybe the year before. And Freddie Mac's been looking at big data about housing for, 55 years or 60 years. They've got a lot of background in this. But this was what they were trying to do with the MIMI index, this multi-indicator market index, is to show what stable looks like. There is talk in the real estate industry about how we keep trying to get back to the height of the market, but the height of the market isn't a normal market. It's not a stable market. We need to do better than we're doing now. We're selling roughly 400,000 to 500,000 new homes a year on an annualized basis. We started really slow at the beginning of the year. The final numbers won't be anywhere near that big. Maybe we'll hit 400,000. We should be selling between 800 and 1 million new houses a year, but there are a lot of reasons that's not happening. So if we're not selling the number of new houses that we need to sell, and we're not really selling the existing houses, what does that mean? Are housing markets weak? Are they in range for stability? Are they elevated? And so you're seeing markets that are really not as stable as you would want them to be. And in fact, the headline from Freddie Mac this week is housing markets struggle to keep stable momentum. That's not a robust housing recovery. What they're showing is that housing prices are continuing to moderate. It's a good thing and a bad thing. It's good that housing prices have gone up, right? We just talked about negative equity and that more people are coming into positive equity. So housing prices moderate means that there is danger of more people falling into negative equity. On the other hand, we're seeing purchase applications fall. And that's worrisome when mortgage interest rates are like nearly at a 50-year low. So it's kind of interesting to watch what's going on. And I'm not sure that in my Glinkonomics view this week that I have a really clear understanding of what it is. But we are seeing that the slight decline in this MIMI index is broad-based. And Freddie Mac is saying that while we're still seeing an elevated market in Atlanta, in New York, and on pretty much the Eastern East Coast, Chicago looks good, and, there's some places in Southern California that look good. We're also seeing some markets that are weaker, where Milwaukee, for example, things are weaker. Dallas is a little bit weaker. So we're not seeing quite the growth that we were seeing, and Illinois overall is weak. Georgia trend is declining, actually, according to the markets. Florida, we're seeing a weak, the trend is improving, but it's, the status is considered weak. California, trend is improving, but the status is weak. And so, Texas, the trend is deteriorating. So there's just, it's interesting to kind of watch where we are and where all of the different states are and the levers that are being pulled to make it do a little bit better. Anyway, if you want to explore this, you can go to freddiemac.com/mimi, M-I-M-I, and you can play around with this interactive Mac yourself and see if you can figure out what it really tells you. But what it's telling me is that while a few states are in range, most of the states out there are a little bit weak and the market conditions seem to be deteriorating, which is strange given that we just had a GDP number that looked pretty good. So we'll parse this all out next week. So join me again next week on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time. And in the meantime, you can find me online on Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, ThinkLink.com, ExpertRealEstateTips.com, my YouTube channel, Expert Real Estate Tips, and all the places that we play online. Hope you have a great week, everybody. See you next Sunday.